12 комуністів в однім курортнім місті зустрілися на з'їзді чи на пленумі ЦК. В готелі поселились, а чим то закінчилось? Про це моя історія нерадісна така. 12 комуністів пішли купатись в море, і в хвилі променисті кожен весело стрибав. Та двоє з перепою лишились під водою, отже й починається, як я попереджав. Бо тільки 10 вийшли із води, ось так і зменшується в партії ряди. Вже 10 комуністів покупані та чисті, в покоях одномісних перетравлюють обід. 8 перетравилось, а 2 отруїлось, а 3 у моїй пісні ще захворіли на снід. Всі 8 комуністів останні чули вісті про снід, що ходить в місті, попередив партактив. Розважились приємно в непевнім товаристві, типовий сексуальний кримінальний детектив. 3 неслухняних довелося поховати, і залишилося із 8 тільки 5. З 5 комуністів 1 помер на місці, бо кинув сигарету на імпортний килим. А 4 душили, з них 3 так спішили, що довго не прожили, бо попав у горло диму. Багато комуністів померло в моїй пісні, сама Агата Крісті позаздрила б мені. Та ще один лишився, що в морі не втопився, обідом не втруївся і не загинув у вогні. Такі не тонуть і в пожежах не горять, вони і досі на шиях в нас сидять.
And another YouTube soundtrack for you there. That was by a group called Trezube Stas. And the song was, the audio was from a video entitled Leninopad v Ukraini. And the song was Dvanadset Komuniste. And for the Ukrainian challenge, that means Lenin is coming down in Ukraine, and the title of the song "Dvanadsete komuniste" is 12 communists, sort of, so not quite like 99 bottles of beer on the wall, but sort of that idea. Вітаю вас всіх, шановні радіослухачі, на радіопрограму «Наш голос» Радіо Українського коріння. При мікрофоні Павліна Макорі, дякую, що рішили перебути зі мною наступну годину. Hello there, and welcome to Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio here on AM 1320 CHMB Vancouver. I'm Pavlina, your host. Thank you so much for joining me. We've got a great program lined up for you. Sylvia Molnar has a recipe, very seasonal, as we try to bring you as well. Renata Hananets will be along with Ukrainian Jewish heritage and a look at another lost Jewish community in Ukraine, that being Husyatin. As well, we'll be joined by Lydia Wolanski, a journalist in Ukraine, a former Vancouverite, in fact, and she'll be bringing us up to date on events, at least up to this past Friday about midnight. And this being a pre-recorded program, things may change between the time I'm actually recording this and the time you're listening to it. However, we hope that they don't, because she has some actually fairly good news for us. So hopefully it will just be better by the time that you're listening. And as well, we will have our usual proverb of the week, other items of interest, and great Ukrainian music. And it's going to be all pertaining to the Maidan and the protests and very recent music, most of it, on today's program. Up next is a group called The Wailers, and this is a reggae group. It was formed, it's actually the group that Bob Marley led before he passed away, Bob Marley being a legendary reggae singer, much beloved and still much mourned. He died in the early 1980s. And this is a song that The Wailers, the group that is his legacy, created especially for Maidan. So this is great. Reggae singers singing about the Maidan and encouraging the protesters to stand up for their rights. Here they are now, The Wailers, with Maidan Light, Stand Up Ukraine.
This one is international solidarity. Ukraine, get up, stand up, fight for your rights.
I get up, stand up, stand up for your rights. I get up, stand up.
foresight and generosity of its donors, the Taras Shevchenko Foundation has been investing in the future of the Ukrainian-Canadian community for the past 50 years. Since 1963, the Taras Shevchenko Foundation has been funding initiatives that strengthen our Ukrainian-Canadian identity and enhance our Ukrainian-Canadian cultural heritage. These include fine and performing artists and arts groups, museums, cultural centers, education, as well as authors, journalists, and the Ukrainian-Canadian media, including this program. The foundation strives to become the premier not-for-profit foundation in a Canada which acknowledges the Ukrainian-Canadian community as a fundamental component of Canadian society. Nash Holis listeners are encouraged to support this vision through continued donations into the future. To apply for grants, make a donation, or for more information, contact the Shevchenko Foundation at 204-944-9128, toll-free 1-866-524-5314, or visit shevchenkofoundation.com.
Горіла бочка димила, горіла бочка димила, бідне дівчина сиріла, горіла бочка димила, бідне дівчина сиріла, бідне дівчина сиріла. Бідне дівчина сиділа, тендітні рученьки гріла, тендітні рученьки гріла. Бідне дівчина сиділа, тендітні рученьки гріла, тендітні рученьки гріла. Ой, руці, ви мої, ой, руці, ви мої, довго носили напої, ой, руці, ви мої, довго носили напої, гарячу каву та ще чай. Гарячу каву та ще чай, грійся, Майдане, не скучай, грійся, Майдане, не скучай. Гарячу каву та ще чай, грійся, Майдане, не скучай, грійся, Майдане, не скучай. Горів у бочці цілий день, горів у бочці цілий день, грілися люди цілий день, грілися люди цілий день, горів у бочці цілий день, грілися люди цілий день, грілися люди цілий день, горіла бочка палала. Горіла бочка палала, як Україна повстала, горіла бочка палала, як Україна повстала.
And another song recently from the Maidan, a song called Горіла бочка, a traditional Ukrainian folk song redone with a Maidan theme, Burning Barrels. And now, Ukrainian Food Flair with Sylvia Molnar. Tips for Ukrainian cooking.
Hello. Buckwheat pancakes are a nice variation of regular or buttermilk pancakes. The buckwheat flour in the following recipe imparts a very lovely nutty flavor. There are two versions of these thin pancakes. One batter is made with baking powder and the other is made with yeast. Both are delicious and easy to make. For the yeast batter, you'll need the following ingredients. 2 packages of dried yeast, 1 tablespoon of sugar or honey, 1/2 cup scalded milk, cooled to lukewarm, 1 cup milk, sour milk or buttermilk, 2 eggs, 2 tablespoons oil, 1 1/2 cups buckwheat flour, and 1 teaspoon of salt. Dissolve the yeast with sugar or honey in the lukewarm milk. Stand until bubbly, about 10 minutes. Stir in the liquid, eggs, and oil. Beat in flour and salt until smooth. The batter should be thin, so if it's too thick, add more milk. Cover and let stand about an hour. Stir down and let sit for another 10 minutes before baking on a medium-hot greased skillet. Of course, these are wonderful with any fruit syrup. Until next time, try it. It's Ukrainian.
Join us again next week for Ukrainian Food Flair with Sylvia Molnar.
Що працює на народ, хліб не краде, не привласнює завод. Рівноправство для жінок в суспільному житті. Вони матері дітей, без них немає сім'ї. Сім'ям вже тло, щоб у них все було. Щоб народжувати дітей і дитятко росло. Медицинська допомога незалежно від грошей. Повноцінне лікування і для бідних людей. Бабусям, дідусям, які все побудували. Пенсії попіднімати, щоб не голодували. Щоб не стидно було вийти погулять. Вдіти гарний костюм та гуцулку станцювати. Вільний доступ до ресурсів незалежно від зв'язків. Незалежно хто ти є і від статусу батьків. Вільний розвиток людей без державного пресу. Тільки так ми досягнемо прогресу. Ми поставимо кінець, я за культ свободи всіх, хто зі мною молодець. Хто візьме хабаря, в космос полетить. В нас корупції не буде, тут таким нема де жити. Суботекс, алкоголь, метадон, нікотин. Кожний день пожирають дітей України. Я за овощі після спорту для всіх. Ча-ча-ча для старих і конфу для малих. 600 тисяч українців помирає кожен рік. А іще половина емігрує. Може Україна не дожити цей вік. Крім нас, українців, ніхто неньку не врятує. Тисячу років ми воювали за нашу свободу. І що ми дістали? Грошей народу не було і немає. Він з голоду тихо здихає.
And Artisto from Ukraine with a song that became the anthem of the Euromaidan protests, Revolucia, Revolution. And now, Ukrainian Jewish Heritage, hosted by Renata Hananets in cooperation with the Jewish Heritage Museum in Lviv, Ukraine. This special Nash Holos feature is brought to you by the Ukrainian Jewish Encounter Initiative based in Toronto, Ontario.
До Добрий день! This is Renata Ганинець, and the Faina Petrykova Scientific Center for Judaic and Jewish Art in Lviv, Ukraine. Gusyadin is a town in the Ternopil Oblast of Western Ukraine, located on the west bank of the Zbruch River. This river formed the old boundary between Austro-Hungary and the Russian Empire in the 19th century, and the boundary between the Republic of Poland and the Soviet Union during the interwar period of the 20th century. The history of the Jewish community in Gusyadin spans more than 500 years. After its incorporation as a town in 1559, Jews were among the first to settle there. Despite being small and vulnerable to anti-Semitic attacks, by the late 19th century, Gusyadin was a thriving commercial center and one of the most important Hasidic centers in Galicia. The Gusyadin Synagogue is a rare example of the 16th century fortress synagogue built in the Renaissance style. Contemporary Yiddish writer Anski described the Gusyadin Synagogue as one of the loveliest and most splendid in Galicia. Jewish American historian Omer Bartov described the synagogue as exquisite. The 18th century partition of Poland turned Gusyadin into a border town, marking it an important part of trade between Austria and Russia. Merchants came from surrounding areas to trade in fairs in the town. In the 1800s, Hasidism began to grow in Gusyadin. The influx of religious devotes fueled the rise of local hospitality industry, along with new synagogues, ritual baths, hospitals and old age homes. Other new industries included a Jewish-owned fountain pen factory, print shops and paper merchants, as well as doctors, lawyers and other professionals. In 1890, of the town's 6,000 residents, Jews numbered 4,200. Gusyadin's golden age ended in the 20th century. Gusyadin was heavily damaged during World War I, then in World War II destroyed entirely. In 1914, the Russian army attacked Austria through Gusyadin, burning more than 600 buildings. In 1915, Jews were ordered out of Gusyadin. Those who defied the order were exiled to Kiev in 1916. When the Bolsheviks came to power, they confiscated property from Jewish-owned businesses. The Hasidim center was closed and the damaged electric lighting system was not repaired. By 1921, the Jewish population had declined by over 90%, numbering a mere 368. In 1941, Gusyadin was conquered by the German army. The community was soon burdened by forced labor, confiscation of property, and anti-Semitic propaganda and provocation. 200 Jews were murdered in Gusyadin, and in March 1942, any remaining were rounded up by the Nazi and deported never to return. In 1964, renovations began on the standing ruins of the synagogue. It was turned into a museum in 1972, but closed in the 1990s due to lack of funding. Today the roof has collapsed and the building stands vacant. The last known Hasidic Jewish burial was 1940. The Jewish cemetery in Gusyadin is unfenced, unprotected and unmarked. The site is now owned by the municipality. Atop it are a park, playground and sport fields. The cemetery boundaries are smaller than 1939 because of new roads and adjacent housing. The cemetery is visited occasionally by organized Jewish tours and pilgrimage groups and local residents. Today, it along with a few historical records and diminished memories are all that remains of Gusyadin's glorious Jewish past. This is Renata Ганинець at the Faina Petrykova Scientific Center for Judaica and Jewish Art in Lviv, Ukraine. Until next time, Shalom.
Thank you, Renata. Щиро дякую. Join us again next week for another episode of Ukrainian Jewish Heritage here on Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio, brought to you by the Ukrainian Jewish Encounter Initiative.
Хоч до кого строка зима. Hey, oh. naszych wolności się zaczyna. Co dziś powstało, niech żyje wiecznie i nie zginie. Ty nie stój obok i podaj rękę Ukrainie. Że nie wmerła Ukraina, kiedy razem jesteśmy jak rodzina. Jest nadzieja, co wiecznie przypomina, że nie wmerła Ukraina. Przyjaciel, co wielki znalazł się potrzebie, wyruszył w drogę, która poprowadziła ciebie. Idź ramię w ramię, a przyjaźń wasza nie przeminie. Nadeszła pora, by podać rękę Ukrainie. Że nie wmerła Ukraina, kiedy razem jesteśmy jak rodzina. Jest nadzieja, co wiecznie przypomina, że nie wmerła Ukraina. Kiedy przyjdzie czas na bal,
and a Polish group called Taraka and a song called Podaj Ruku Ukrainie, Give a Hand to Ukraine. And up next is another YouTube soundtrack, and this is a song called Vidya Chow. Very apropos, we hope, anyways. It is basically saying ciao to Yanukovych. Hope he stays away. And here they are. I'm not sure the name of the group, but here's the song, Vidya Chow. Ви слухаєте українську радіопрограму «Наш голос» Радіо Українського коріння на багатомовній радіостанції CHMB AM 1320 у місті Ванкувері. You're listening to «Наш голос» Ukrainian Roots Radio on AM 1320 CHMB Vancouver. Well, this has been another momentous week for anybody following the Euromaidan protests in Ukraine and, of course, for the people there right in the midst of it. And one of the people who is right there in the midst of it is Lydia Wolanski, and this is someone we've had on Nash Holos before to keep us apprised of what is happening and to give us a really good overview and analysis. And we spoke by Skype late on Friday, and I started out by asking her about this deal that was signed, an agreement reached between President Yanukovych and the opposition leaders. Our own Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper had put out a statement on Friday afternoon indicating that he was cautiously optimistic about the outcome. And I asked Lydia if there was actually reason for optimism.
Well, I think the agreement people are talking about is the one that involved the Polish, German and French foreign ministers and an authorized representative of Russia, who's actually Russia's human rights ombudsman, believe it or not.
It sounds like an oxymoron.
Well, you will discover that it probably was. So this deal was signed that basically said that all the special forces and the interior forces must leave the city, that the presidential elections have to be done by December of 2014, that the presidential powers are going to be completely reduced to at least the level that they were in 2004. Which, among other things, actually ended up meaning that a lot of legislation had to be withdrawn, because some of the changes were made through legislation. Some of them were made by the illegal changes to the Constitution that the Constitutional Court had made. Mm-hmm. But other ones over 2010 and 2012 were actually expanding his powers through legislation that was completely unlawful. Mm-hmm. The final one was that there has to be a technical government established in Ukraine in the meantime, that there would not be any political government at all. It would be just a technical one. Now, the French and the German and Polish FM signed it. The Russian one refused. Well, of course, it's not a document that Russia has any power over, so that didn't affect the situation at all. The thing is that then the parliament met after that, the Verkhovna Rada, and they started implementing some of this stuff. And what happened was that there was a motion table to fire Zakharchenko, the interior minister, who has been behind all the actual organizing of the violence on the ground, because he's the top cop and he runs the interior forces as well, to fire Pshonka, who is the prosecutor general, who's been doing all these kangaroo courts to put people in jail for things like transporting tires for 15. And then the third person was Klimenko, who's the minister of, which is now called the Revenues and Charges. He's effectively the head of the tax administration, who obviously has been involved in arranging a lot of schemes for siphoning public money away from the public purse to their pockets. Unfortunately, they only voted to get rid of Zakharchenko, and they did not vote to bring him to justice. They simply fired him, and he apparently disappeared very quickly after that, needless to say. Then there was a motion tabled to basically fire Yanukovych and take him to trial. That was not tabled. And the final thing, Yatsenyuk put forward a motion to release Yulia Tymoshenko from jail, and that was passed. The minute that happened, the speaker left the parliament. He basically walked out, did not put on the agenda any of the other stuff that people had placed. And basically the demand to get rid of Yanukovych is really the main demand. Mm-hmm. Maidan, all those other things are peripheral. Maidan is not about Yulia and it's not about Zakharchenko. It's about Yanukovych. Mm-hmm. So he left, and for some reason there were no deputy speakers around. There are two of them who could have continued the session, so the session was effectively closed. I talked to CTV last night, and I was telling them, I said, I don't think the Maidan is going to take this very well at all. And in fact, that's exactly what happened. When the opposition came out to announce these results, the Maidan just went livid, because they have been taking the bodies of those who were killed the previous 2 days, through the Maidan for their last respects the entire day. So you can imagine the kind of atmosphere that there was on the Maidan, and there were apparently about 50,000 people there. So when this stuff came out, people were just frosted. There's like Hanba, Zakohet, the usual kind of stuff, because that is their key thing. That's why they're standing there, is to get rid of Yanukovych. He represents everything that's evil and awful and wrong about Ukraine today. So, and in fact, what happened is the opposition leaders made their speeches, like Chakhnibok and Yatsenyuk and Klitschko. And Klitschko said, you know, I'm sorry that you're upset, he said, because I am trying to do everything in the way that I believe is right to do. In other words, they're trying to stay within the legal framework on all of this. And he obviously looked very upset himself. He looks like he's lost weight in the last while. I mean, he looked pretty gaunt, actually. But then a guy from one of the companies, because of all these companies that have been organized around Ukraine, and especially starting in Kyiv for self-defense purposes, he got up and he made this impassioned speech, and he said, you know, I'm just an ordinary guy. I'm not standing here for anything except for having this country better. And he said, I'm not going to accept this. I'm not going to take this lying down. He said, if this guy doesn't go by 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, we're going to be storming the place with weapons. And the audience just went wild. I mean, it was obvious that everybody's like pent up fury was just out there to be seen. The interesting thing is that the parliament building and the cabinet of ministers were actually taken over last night, completely peaceably. Mm-hmm. So Paruby and Pravi Sector, Paruby being the guy that's the commandant of the actual Maidan, and Pravi Sector being the right sector, the more militarized group under Dmytro Yarosh, they actually took over those two buildings not long afterwards. In the meantime, the plot thickens. We find out that Yanukovych has flown off to Kharkiv, apparently, with two of his henchmen, one of them being the Speaker of the Parliament, who's actually a founder of Party of the Regions, and the other one being Andriy Kluyev, who was the National Security Council chair, and who's believed to be the main guy, the main intermediary between the Yanukovych government and Putin. They supposedly left off to Calgary. Too much Canadian in me. They went to Kharkiv. The interesting aside in here is that in the meantime, the SBU, the security service of Ukraine, issued a warning to Kharkiv that they are not allowed by law to engage in seditious or separatist activity, which is what they have been doing. The mayor of Kharkiv, Gennady Kernes, and the governor of the Kharkiv Oblast, Mikhail Dobkin, have been setting up something called the Ukrainian Front, which is very clearly a pro-Russian thing. And they have clearly been doing something to stir up separatist feeling in the region in preparation for maybe Russia taking over or marching in through there. The average Kharkiv person, I don't think, is really standing behind anything like that, because for all their stuff about Banderites and stuff, I think most Kharkiv people are actually, you know, they still think of themselves as Ukrainian. They're not about to pack up and become Russians. Mm-hmm. So the SBU issued this warning saying, you know, don't do that because that's seditious and it's against the law. And in the meantime, everybody thought that these people were going to Kharkiv, flying to Kharkiv, and then we'd have this problems going on in Kharkiv. Another point I wanted to make, because this is something I found out later from a friend who has some ins with the military. When this entire deal was being cut with the European foreign ministers and the prime minister of Ukraine and the opposition, the president of Ukraine, Mr. Yanukovych, and the opposition, the entire presidential administration was filled with guys with machine guns. Filled with them. Now, normally, the guards that are supposed to be the presidential guards and specifically are intended to protect him are called the Alpha Unit. And everybody assumed that this was the Alpha Unit. Apparently, this was not the Alpha Unit. This was one ex-Alpha guy, and the rest of them were all Russian.
Oh.
So this Russian military team, a SWAT team protecting Ukraine's putative president. And apparently Yanukovych actually openly threatened that if they didn't cut the deal that he wanted, that he was going to start shooting again. So I think at that point, regardless of anything else, because everything else you still had to kind of make the connections, you know, follow the dots, this was very open. So I think this is where he basically completely openly made himself a criminal. So people were watching. Actually, it turns out you can actually track flights. I knew that a couple of days ago. You can completely track any flight if you know the number of the airplane. So they were tracking this flight, and he says, oh, he's not going to Kharkiv. He's heading for Sochi. Okay. Oh, he's not heading for Sochi. He's heading for Yerevan. No, he's not heading for Yerevan. He's going to Iran. And then at one point in Iran, the plane was a little bit lost. Maybe they have some kind of scrambling stuff there. I don't know. And then the next thing they see, the plane ended up going to the Emirates. So it's unbelievable. So it's nobody has any idea why it went to the Emirates. There is suspicion, of course, that it was full of bullion in addition to bullies. So, and yeah, it makes sense because the Emirates are run very much like the way Yanukovych wanted to run Ukraine, which is a small family runs it, and then the other families that they allow into the game get to run the place as well. So it's basically their kind of place. And I was kind of laughing in Facebook thinking, saying, oh, maybe they're going to set up an eighth Emirate called Yanukovia. Anyways, this is the last we know. As far as we know, Yanukovych fled there with a couple of his closest people. Now, we have no confirmation of that. All we know is that this plane of his that left Kyiv, looking like it was going for Kharkiv, ended up going all the way to the United Arab Emirates. So, in the meantime, the SBU issued an arrest warrant for Kernes and Dobkin. Kernes, again, being the mayor of Kharkiv, and Dobkin being the governor of Kharkiv Oblast. They've actually issued an arrest warrant for them. So it's hard to know what's going to happen next, because a lot of people have been terrified that, you know, the minute this started getting really bad for Yanukovych, that Putin would start making some moves like marching soldiers in or whatever, because they've been talking about that all along, ever since this protests have started pretty much. All kinds of Russian officials, especially Sergei Lavrov, their foreign minister, have done nothing but threaten that, you know, we're going to move, march in to protect Ukraine against, I don't know who, protect
the
Ukraine.
People.
Yeah, protect Ukraine against the people. And, you know, and a lot of Ukrainians are terrified that that could happen. They really are. So that's been another thing that's making them feel, been making them feel that we need to be cautious because we don't know what the Russians are going to do. My feeling about that has been all along is you get this done fast. You do it while Sochi is still happening. You don't wait until it's over.
Yeah.
And Sochi is over today or tomorrow. It's tomorrow, I think, the closing ceremony. But the good news yesterday was that Ukrainians won a gold medal. So,
yes, congratulations.
So there was a lot of good news yesterday all the way around, in addition to the very sad thing of all these young men and not so young men who were killed yesterday being prepared for burial at their hometowns. The youngest person killed was 17.
Oh.
And then some people were in their 50s, older family men and grandfathers and stuff.
Yeah, there have been people that have suggested that the Maidan protesters are all a bunch of fanatical fascists.
Well, the thing that's interesting is that on Tuesday, when they went marching up to the Verkhovna Rada, there was a bit of give and take involved. There's no question about that. But that's when some of the sniping first started. On Wednesday and Thursday, when they started sniping, they were like shooting fish in a bowl. I mean, people were standing around watching the Maidan. People were not storming anything. Nobody had weapons in their hands. There was no on-the-ground confrontation. But you had these snipers on top of the Hotel Ukraina, on top of the trade union building, which was burned out as well, on top of and there was a guy standing behind a truck near the Kozatsky Hotel. And they were just picking people off. And these are professional sharpshooters. These people were hitting in the head, the neck, and the heart. They were not making any mistakes. Any mistakes they were made were not mistakes. They were deliberate. So it was pretty horrible to watch. People were literally just being picked off because everybody was just standing around. They were exposed. They weren't storming anything. So I think for the West, that might have really been the turning point when they saw this going on. It's one thing when guys are lobbing Molotov cocktails at you and you're fighting back as a forces guy. It's a very different thing when people are simply walking around, no weapons, no shields, no nothing, and somebody's standing on a roof picking them off.
I hope that is getting through to people in the West, because I had a Facebook conversation recently with someone who insisted that the protesters were attacking unarmed peasant conscripts. So that's the most. Yeah, that was my reaction too.
That's really insulting to say unarmed peasant conscripts. There's no peasants in Ukraine. This person's like somewhere in the 19th century. I don't know what he even means by peasant conscripts.
Well, you know what? Obviously, I mean, this is a young person, a recent university graduate, and obviously he was parroting something that he, you know, learned in university.
The interesting thing is that the left has never been very supportive of Ukraine.
No kidding.
You see that everywhere. The Guardian has written some really awful stuff about this whole event. They also had this article by, I think it was Seamus Milne, wrote a piece talking about, oh, this is not what you think it is. This is really fascists mm-hmm. and oligarchs and Western expansion. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm thinking, geez, what books is he writing out? Little yeah. Red Book, not yeah. a 2014 version. And the thing is, the response to what he had written was outraged, absolutely outraged. But there are simply a lot of very, very good, very objective analysts out there writing about it, like Timothy Snyder and Michael Winicky, who was also mm-hmm. a professor at McGill Academy. Mm-hmm. There are people out there who are really presenting the picture much more clearly. The thing is that anybody who talks that way simply is not watching what's going on the Maidan. There is like hundreds of videos at this point yeah. of participants in the Maidan. For one thing, there have been videos of a young Jewish woman there talking about Jewish participation in the mm-hmm. Maidan. Mm-hmm. There have been videos of, you know, just ordinary people, why they came there, you know, like middle-aged people, young people, every age range, every education level. And there have been surveys done of who the people are on the Maidan. And it's something like 50% of them have a higher education. Mm-hmm. It's like crazy when people start talking about, you know, this kind of thing, peasant soldiers and stuff.
Yeah.
For one thing, they, you know, anyway, I'm not going to even go there.
Yeah.
But the point is that at one point in Kyiv, on December 8th, there were drone cameras flying around downtown Kyiv, and they took pictures, and there were 2.4 million is the estimate of how many people were standing there.
Wow.
And Ukraine doesn't have skinheads. Most European countries have far more neo-Nazis and fascists and skinheads than Ukraine does.
Mm-hmm.
So to say that Ukraine is fascist and neo-Nazi and stuff like that is completely off the wall.
It is.
Because I've seen nothing but complete support for the Maidan. From Zionist organizations down to local Ukrainian organizations, they have all been 100% behind the Maidan. So that kind of, to my mind, that's pretty good indication that they don't consider the people there Nazis, fascists, or anti-Semites at all. So people need to kind of open their eyes and look at what's really going on. I mean, I'm just amazed at how you can simply not want to see something.
Yeah. So there is an ultimatum.
Well, the ultimatum was set, but in fact, last night, that's what I was trying to say, that last night, those main buildings were taken over completely peaceably.
Okay.
It's obvious that Yanukovych is gone. Now, that doesn't mean that there can't be some kind of random provocateurish or, you know, loose cannony violent incident yet. My feeling from the developments in the last 12 hours, which have been incredibly rapid, is that, you know, God willing, there will not be any more violence because the people who are causing these confrontations appear to have left the scene. There's nobody around to order the Berkut and the interior forces to do anything. For one thing, they were all sent home. So thousands of them actually did go home over the last 2 days because the resolution was passed in the parliament on Thursday telling them to go home.
Wow.
Yeah.
So there's no need for Yanukovych to resign. He's basically been impeached.
Well, to be impeached, he still would have to go through the parliament. That would still have to go officially. And maybe they may do that today. But he's actually absconded. So I mean, if he's out of the country at this point and nobody knows where he is, he can probably be arrested in absentia for treason or for attempted murder, for threatening to kill everybody, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's obvious he's off his rocker. Not surprising. It's not surprising. I mean, he is a person who's been damaged since his youth. Based on his record of sitting in jail twice for assault and battery, and then a third incident when he was already not a minor had to do with a gang rape. And apparently the story I got several times was that he was exonerated because he agreed to marry the judge's daughter. I think she was actually mentally handicapped, which made it an important issue for the judge. So who knows? I don't know. That could all be apocryphal. Who knows? But that's the story I've heard.
So things are quiet now. As of midnight Friday local time, it's looking like there may be a peaceful resolution and an end finally to the violence.
Well, it's certainly looking that way because two women who came with me, we were in a bus of about 50 from the Vietnam Chisuk in Vanafankivsk area coming in yesterday. And the two of the women one of them had her brother and the husband of the other woman was downtown. And they said they didn't want any of them staying there. So they came and stayed at my place. And then this morning they took off. At 7 or 8 o'clock, they went back down there because there's no feeling anymore that there's any risk.
So no more burning tires?
Don't know about burning tires. There's probably not much reason to. Unfortunately, had tires been burning, it might have prevented some of the snipers from actually seeing their targets. But I mean, nobody anticipated something like that, you know, shooting fish in a barrel.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty horrible. But the thing is, you know, as I was saying earlier, Churchill's statement about World War II really applies right now. This is not the end, and it's not even the beginning of the end. This is the end of the beginning. What's going on from now on in is going to be also very hard for Ukrainians because their country has been brought to its knees economically and fiscally. It's on the verge of bankruptcy. It needs some very good people in there running the government, getting all the finances back, on target. I mean, Italy's done that, apparently. Italy's had three technical governments in the last 20 years, and they've always they could basically help bail the country out from an incredible financial crisis. So if we can find similar people to do that in Ukraine, then there is some chance that Ukraine will be back on track within this next year. But there's a lot of work going to have to happen. And there is a lot of suspicion that all these planes that were leaving Ukraine in the last few days were not carrying simply passengers with little suitcases. They were carrying bullion and other valuables out of the country. I would suspect the treasury is probably close to empty at this point. The reserves are pretty much gone. So, the country is in a very bad shape now. Now that the criminal stuff is kind of being settled, the day-to-day stuff has to be handled. And there's a lot of also what people recognize here is a process of not so much education as awareness building to overcome those things that have hampered Eastern and Southern Ukraine, but more Eastern Ukraine than Southern Ukraine, from being full-fledged citizens of this country called Ukraine. It is a matter of education and informing, and it's also a matter of some kind of conciliation between them and other parts of Ukraine that they have always perceived as enemies, as Banderites, as people who are going to cut their throats because they speak Russian, and all this kind of stuff that has been constantly beaten into their brains. And also getting them away from Russian media that distorts so much of what goes on in Ukraine. So there's an enormous amount of work to be done on the personal level and on the state level to get the country back together. And the final thing that really, really needs national healing is the Holodomor.
Mm-hmm.
The current education minister, Dmytro Tabachnik, actually removed information about the Holodomor from history books several years ago.
Right.
And so teachers who wanted to teach their students had to pretty much make their own programs. And I mean, to me, that would be the equivalent of the Israeli education minister removing information about the Holocaust from Israeli history books or removing it from German history books. Can anybody even fathom something like that being done? So today, actually, hundreds of students have taken over the Ministry of Education, and they're calling for this guy to be gotten rid of as well. But this is just one of the many things that has to be process. And the very Holodomor itself, the fact that people are still so much in denial about it in the very regions where it was the most horrible, the regions that lost the most people are still very much in denial about the Holodomor. So, which is the man-made famine of 1932-33, an estimated 4 to 7 million Ukrainians died in the process.
Yeah. Well, Lydia, there's a lot of work to do, but you're of Ukrainian background, and so am I, and none of us is afraid of hard work, and I'm sure Ukrainians in Ukraine today aren't either, and are very willing to do the work that has to be done, working towards a positive future.
Yes, that's exactly it, working together to a positive future.
Thank you so much, Lydia, for speaking with us, and Godspeed to you.
Yes, Godspeed to you, Craig.
Thanks. Lydia Walensky, former Vancouver resident and journalist, now living in Ukraine and reporting on the Euromaidan. And you're listening to AM 1320 CHMB Vancouver. Here's what's coming up this week in Vancouver's Ukrainian community. On Wednesdays, catch Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio broadcasting live from Nanaimo to north and central Vancouver Island, the Gulf Islands, the Sunshine Coast, northwest Washington State, and greater Vancouver. In our new two-hour time slot, 11:30 a.m. till 1:30 p.m. Pacific Time, Wednesdays on CHLY Radio Malaspina, 101.7 FM on the radio dial and streaming online at chly.ca. You can get the links to the podcast for both the Nanaimo and this Vancouver edition at www.nashholos.com. On Friday, there's a pierogi supper at St. Mary's Ukrainian Orthodox Center, 13512 108th Avenue in Surrey. Doors are open from 4:30 to 7:30 p.m. For more information, call 604-531-1923 or 604-581-0313 or visit their website, www.uocstmarysurrey.com. Contact TV airs on Multicultural Channel Omni 1 and on Channel 8 on Shaw Cable Sunday mornings at 8 a.m. with a repeat broadcast the following Monday at noon. If you have announcements or story ideas you'd like aired on Contact, please email them at studio@contact.ca. That's studio@kontakt.ca. And at 5 p.m. Sunday evening, flip your radio dial right back here to AM 1320 CHMB Vancouver and join me for another hour of fun here on Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio. In between broadcasts, you'll find upcoming events, program information, audio archives, podcast feeds, and much more at www.nashholos.com. And that was the Key of Pops with a recording of a traditional Ukrainian folk song, Розпляхайте, хлопці, коні. Ну, ми вже скінчили нашу програму, вже часу домові сказати до побачення, але перед тим я хочу залишити вас такими словами мудрості. Є і такі на світі дурні, як думають, що вони розумні. And our proverb of the week translates as, fools always think they are wise. Well, that just about wraps up our program. So to take us to the end, we've got Prairie Crocus from Winnipeg from their CD Back Up and Push and the Liberty Two-Step. I'm Pavlina Demchik-McQuarrie on behalf of all of us here at Nosh Hollis and AM 1320. Thanks for listening and Dobranich!
One, two, three, four!